answer your question about how long back our intro is.
BJ and I were just chatting back and forth. The intro music's still 3 minutes?
Yeah,
it's 3 minutes, but now it's 2 minutes, buddy, to another episode of 8 Bits. Your host, Brandon Minnick, and with me, as always, PJ Metz. PJ, how's your week?
Ta-da! I'm PJ. I'm having a great, great, great week. I am currently in the middle of a great internal event at GitLab called Contribute, where all day long we have talks from people at GitLab and team building activities, and there's a bunch of video games that I've been playing from GitLab Contribute, and one of them is like the game Breakout. Did you ever play like or Arkanoid for Super Nintendo?
You have the bar on the bottom, and you like hit a ball that breaks.
You got it. That's the exact one. You're absolutely correct. It is taking up so much of my time because I had the high score at like 9 o'clock this morning, and now I'm in third place and it's driving me crazy. So I have a haircut appointment later today. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have my laptop during my haircut, just like trying to get the high score on that. So if I need to send back my MacBook because there's a bunch of tiny hairs in the keyboard, no one say anything. Okay. All right. That's our little secret.
Yeah. I get that little key. That compressed air.
That's right.
Maybe even the barber will for you.
Maybe we'll put some talc powder on there too. That's good for the computer, right?
Yeah, uses a straight razor on the keyboard.
Gotta have clean edges. Gotta have clean edges on there. No bevels, just straight lines, please. So, Brandon, I hate to tell you this, but your image is frozen for me, but I don't know if that's true for everyone. But please trust me, Brandon's here live. This is not just me cleverly throwing my voice. I assure you he is here with us.
We are doing something special today. I am actually in Prague. I just landed a couple hours ago. And hosting remotely. We're having all sorts of technical issues getting started. So if it sounds like I'm talking from the moon and because of audio delays, apologize in advance. But I am here because there's an awesome conference this week. Net development. It's called the conference I've spoken at. I think this will be my fourth year in a row. Last year was remote. For conferences, it's one of the biggest .NET conferences. Actually, I think it is the .NET conference in Central Europe. So there's all sorts of good .NET goodies coming out. And if you're not in Prague, even if you're not in Central, and you can't swing by and say hi, check out the link in the comments. Up .NET, you can find and all the talks live stream. Make sure to check it out.
If you are
like I said,
in Prague,
always been one of my favorites.
If you are in Prague, swing by and say hi to Brandon.
Absolutely.
For our huge variety of listeners who are currently in Prague. So Brandon, you got the update conference that you're talking at right now. You've got the .NET conference from last week. Did you say earlier that stuff is now available, that you can just access the materials from that now?
Yeah, that's right. That was last week. Basically, time we always have it where we Microsoft. I didn't have anything to do with this, but Microsoft releases the new version of Visual Studio, new versions of .NET, new versions of C#, all those goodies. Come out at the same time, and that's what .NET Conf is all about. Those videos have been recorded. You can check them out at .NETconf.net.
That's not a confusing URL at all, y'all.
C-O-N-F.
Here, I'm going to throw it up on the screen for those of you looking.
Just queue those up on a playlist, play them in the background. Thanks. Yeah, it's good stuff. If you're like me and like to have just something going on in the background, a little bit of white noise, tests or compiling to look up and catch up, grab those videos from .NET Conf and check them out. And then in about a when the update conference is all done, and all the videos too. So we've got plenty of videos to keep for the upcoming holiday season.
Fantastic. Listen, we got to have content to get us through those. As I understand it in tech, December's kind of a month where things happen, work happens, but not really kind of, and people take time off. And as a teacher, I always knew, okay, I'm getting my 2 weeks off. I didn't know tech likes to do that too. So I'm super excited that I still get a winter break this year. So yeah, like Brandon said, if you're still looking for something when you're sitting around and you want to keep those skills sharp or you want to hear about what's coming up that's new, looking at old conferences, especially .NET Conf, .NET is a great, great resource. Brandon, what do we have today? What's today's show going to be? Who are we talking to?
Such a cool guest. It's by Dr. G. So, might be the smartest hat on the show. We've ever had a PhD on the show before. She works at Microsoft on what we'll call the developer relations, developer advocacy. Let's welcome to the show, Dr. Guthels.
Ta-da!
Hello,
Dr. Guthels.
Hey.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Speaking of like December time off, I'm kind of excited, nervous. I'm getting surgery December 7th, but I'm like, ooh, downtime. I'm just going to be like, you know, a couple weeks while I'm, you know, drugged up on painkillers, probably just watching things on Shudder. But then I can like just dive into random stuff. This is gonna be awesome.
that downtime to actually like do stuff and like I've got downtime. And it's funny because like there used to be a very negative way of looking at that. Like I remember when I was going to a job that I was frustrated with or having a hard time with, I'd be like, man, what happened if like my car just kind of hit this concrete barrier? I would have so much time to just do whatever I wanted. And like,
oh my gosh,
looking back, I'm like, I can't believe that I thought that stuff.
I used to think that so often. Like, oh, but you know, just like a little coma where I can just sleep.
Yeah.
Just for a little while. Like, you know. Yeah. Oh, oh.
Nothing serious. And Yeah, but luckily, like, you know, like when you find a job that you like a little better, that's
yes.
Nice. But listen, the downtime, you said surgery, is this a serious surgery or is it like elective? Like, are you okay?
It's huge. It's kind of huge. I'm getting knee surgery. It's essentially like a knee reconstruction. So I found out recently I've got no cartilage left in my knee. And so it's actually a really cool surgery. They took a biopsy of the little tiny bit of cartilage that's left and they regrew me cartilage. So yeah, I'm going to be getting cartilage in my right knee. They're going to be doing something with my tibia and something with my patella. I don't know. There's like three major procedures happening. And then once I'm recovered enough, my partner will be getting a donor meniscus because they had to take his out because it's torn so many times. And once he's recovered enough, we'll look at my left knee because, you know, we just don't like knees in this family.
Man, that's terrifying. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, at least we're getting better.
Like the, like the million-dollar man. He'll be...
Yes, yes. It's going to be great.
Robotic. Yeah.
I wish I had that sound ready to go. The ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju-ju. So I feel like we need a proper
and
introduction
just got
from you. That's right. Dr. Guthels, I feel like we'd love to have you tell us about yourself and your history and why you are the way you are. Get as deep as you need to, but
oh gosh,
tell us
so
all
it
about
all
yourself.
Started in 1988. actually, yesterday was my birthday. So, you know, mid-30s over here. But yeah, I mean, I am someone who is passionate about education, how people learn, and technology. Particularly about technology because, you know, when I was in college, I realized this is the gateway to access for a lot of people. And with just a little bit of understanding or knowledge or skill, folks can use this tool, technology being kind of a general tool, to improve their lives. Even if it's not something that they're building or it's their industry, if they understand how to use it or how it's being used, they hopefully understand how it impacts their life and kind of improve that. So yeah, I come from a single mother who is from South America, Uruguay, which is a little country next to Argentina. And when I was two, she started college. She hadn't gone to college yet. And so my entire upbringing was centered around the importance of education. She ended up becoming a school teacher. She just retired last year when I was able to move her up to live with us. So I'm excited about that. And yeah, education, learning, it was my special interest. I would pretend teach. That were imaginary. That was my.
And I still wasn't getting good reviews.
Yeah, and so I loved it, but I always wanted to be a medical doctor. Big reason is I have asthma, and I would participate as a guinea pig in asthma studies for medications. So Zyrtec being over the counter, partially because I let them give me Zyrtec
This sounds like you should be saying, like, I'm part of the research that brought Zyrtec to the general public. That should be in your LinkedIn.
Yeah, I mean, and Zyrtec over the counter and not prescription even, I was like, whoa, it's here, it's there, this is so cool. So I love the idea of just like, you know, science and learning and research and all of that. And so I wanted to be a medical doctor, and then I got to college where I was working 3 jobs to pay for it, and I failed my math and my chemistry class. And so I called my mom and I was like, Mom, no. Like, I'm going to go to community college where I can explore at not such steep price and find some things, because what I realized is I love the research, but I didn't love the memorization. And a lot of medicine is just knowing things. And mm-hmm. I don't care to memorize. And so she was like, Mija, please, like, this university was always your dream, just stay for the year. So I did, and lucky, my very first computer science teacher, which I had no clue what computer science was this woman, Beth Simon, who not only was a woman, not only, like, really was invested in teaching, but her research area in computer science was how people learn computer science. So I had, like, the most magical introduction to computer science, which included me being in the lab, having my programs fail so poorly that even the tutors would have the solution code open next to it on the computer and couldn't figure out why mine wasn't working. So it was a rough start. But what's great about it is that the computer would tell you when something went wrong, you know, and if something did go wrong, no one was dying. I mean, you can get into tech where people could die, and I'm not in that part of because I can't handle that. But it was a logic game. It was trying to figure things out, and it was just fun. It felt like a puzzle every day, and so I switched majors. I was able to stay. I felt more comfortable taking out loans and quitting with my jobs because I felt like I could get a job after graduating. Going to medical stuff, started doing research in how people learn computers, ended up staying for a master's and PhD at that same Beth. She became my PhD PhD advisor, along with Bill Griswold, and one of my best friends ended up like renting her house from her when she moved.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and just I stayed, and then, you know, there was like whole things. I started a company while I was doing my PhD. We taught kids how to code. We taught teachers how to teach kids how to code. Built a Minecraft modding software browser prior to Microsoft's acquisition of Minecraft. Wrote some books. I contracted with various companies, including GitHub, where I built like a GitHub for kids under 13, which was fun. I then was 8 months pregnant, and we decided to stop that contracting project and quickly got a full-time job at GitHub as an engineer right before giving birth.
Like you do.
I was lucky enough to work with the incredible Phil Hack as my manager, and I led a team of 10 in the world building the GitHub integrations into Visual Studio, Unity, and Atom. And then moved over to Microsoft to basically be a dev advocate and working on data science, machine learning. I got the opportunity to like tie in Netflix movies and Warner Brothers movies to the narratives of machine learning and partner with NASA on teaching people about data science as it applies to like landing on the moon. It's just been a fun ride. So yeah, I care about teaching and learning.
I gotta echo what Brandon said at the beginning of the show that like you are prolifically intelligent and like you've done so much and like I like it's intimidating to hear how wide a spectrum of amazing things you've done, and I'm just so glad to be like to be sitting here with you because this is such a I just feel blessed and lucky to be around you. So don't let anyone ever tell you you're not amazing because you're totally amazing. Holy moly, Sarah.
Thank you. I mean, I definitely appreciate that. I feel like, though, you know, like 15 years ago when I would hear these people say, oh, I always knew what I was meant to do. And I was like, that's not possible. How could you know that? I've realized now that I've been very lucky. And I believe that everything that has happened has been a combination of luck and being prepared to take advantage of that luck, right? Like if luck presents itself to you and you're not ready to just take advantage, then you're not, it's not lucky, right? And I mean, PJ, I think it would be kind of similar to you, right? Like you met some folks, you met Brandon, you met Chloe, and then you took advantage of that and you were prepared to do that, right? So yes, was it lucky that you knew people? Yes, but also, so you were ready to grab that and take it. And that's honestly what it's been. It's been kind of prepping for that and lately knowing what it is I care about and what it is I'm passionate about and just taking chances.
Yeah.
So I'd love to jump back to back into the education side because a lot of the guests don't have the traditional computer science, let alone the master's degree, the PhD in it. I'm curious, what opportunities opened up, progressed? Because you're working on your master's, does that, like, wise when you move on to PhD, what becomes the focus at your education paths?
Yeah. First, I want to say, and I actually made a TikTok about this because there was some rhetoric happening on Twitter about needing to have a degree from MIT to be able to get into tech. Me, as someone with a PhD in computer science, who my dissertation was about designing learning experiences for novices in tech, you do not need to have that degree. You can go watch my TikTok about it. So I want to say that first and foremost. And honestly, what's kind of interesting about my journey in particular is, for example, I told you kind of like the history of where I came from. And when I applied for that engineering manager position at GitHub, I had the recruiter tell me that I wasn't qualified to be an engineering manager. And luckily, I was 8 months pregnant and my mama bear came out and I put back and I said, no, I think I am. I ran a startup all the way through $1 million revenue before I left. I ran research labs, I think I am. And luckily she pushed my resume over to Phil and Phil was like, yes, definitely she's qualified. I definitely want to interview her. But what's interesting about kind of each of the progressive degrees or position I've had is that they gave me an opportunity to explore the parts of the industry that aren't just the technical parts. So for example, when you're going through your master's degree, it's basically like undergrad courses, but hyper focused on. And so the difference between an undergrad degree where you are also getting general education is that you get to dive a little bit deeper into the technical problems. And that's not something you typically get to do in undergrad. You get to do a little bit more open-ended problems and maybe start researching and cutting edge research that's happening. So that's kind of what that gave me. Doing the PhD is kind of the complete opposite. The coursework is minimally important. It's more about how do you take ideas, explore something that no one else has explored before. To earn a PhD in any field, you have to prove that you have contributed something to that field. Honestly, I think it's easier to get a PhD in computer science than in math. Imagine having to contribute to the field of mathematics.
Y'all want to talk a hard PhD, like literature, where you have to say something right? New?
It's wild. It's wild. I think, but what that gave me is the opportunity to think outside the box, think about how I approach solving a problem that I'm defining the problem, right? Like I'm identifying the problem. I'm defining why it's a hard problem to solve. Why it affects people. And then I'm the solution for it. And that was something that then led to being started a company. Right? And then now with a company, you have to take that kind of problem solving and also add in this business aspect. You have to make money. And it's not because we were selfish and wanted money. It was because to make, like, to employ people, we had to make money so that way we can employ people and they could, you know, have us be their full-time job and not be worried that it was going to disappear. And you know, our customers could rely on the fact that every summer and every, you know, after school program would be there and they plan on that for the future. And so each one of my positions, I think it was a really good question, Brandon, because it presented me with an aspect that was kind of above the tech. It was above the topic and it was more about how I'm approaching part of that community. But it also meant that single time I've ever applied for a job, I've had to prove why that job title is something that could match me, because I've never had a job title that really defines what it is I do.
And I think that's a hard part about titles in general.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But I will also say, and I don't know if the company, but a lot of companies I worked at, most have levels. So usually start as like a level one, then you get promoted to level three, and sometimes they change to level three. But anyways, you have levels, and for buddies maybe curious in getting the master's, getting the PhD, the company's bachelor's degree, my experience, we'll start you at level one. Masters just give you a level two.
Yep.
And PhD will start you at. So there is some monetary. I don't want to. If somebody is looking for making more money and they want to stay later, go for it.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely true. I will say that I pretty much am at the same level as friends who did not get higher degrees. In terms of like the amount of years it took me to get my, it was very similar to the amount of years it took them to get promoted to the level that I would then be hired at. I'm grateful for my journey, because with my ADHD and autism, with my special interest in learning and things, like, I could not have survived doing a 9-to-5 for those years. Like, I needed to be able to be jumping around 500 different ways. But yeah, I mean, they're and think that, like, higher degrees or not even just the degree, but like alternative jobs or alternative experiences also give you to have more creative roles. I would not have been qualified for your position if I had done, like, I had done it at Microsoft using Visual Studio and building with Visual Studio. I had built basically code editor, and I had built a video game in Unity to teach kids how to code. So leading a team of people who built GitHub for video, VS Code, and Unity, Atom, like, I did all of that, basically, right? And I wouldn't have been very well qualified. And it was hard for Phil to find someone who understood all of those different, like, nuanced communities. A developer is very different from a Visual Studio developer. So that was kind of like, you know, a unique set of experiences that led me there. I love that aspect.
You have to I think what a lot of people worry about is that their past is somehow a hindrance to them and where they're headed. Yes. But your past has led you to exactly where you are. And I saw an image today, and it was all the paths that you could have taken in the past, and they're all over the place. But then it's, okay, but where are you now? These are paths that you cannot take anymore. That's not available to you anymore. But what sits in front of you are an equally number of infinite paths that your specific journey has led you to have the opportunity for. Earlier, Dr. Couples, you said it's like you took advantage of luck, and that's what opportunity is. And that's why I think when we talk about equity and we talk about equal opportunity, that's what we're talking about. Not everyone has the same set of opportunities. Yeah. So if we call it hard work and not what it is, which is not only did you have the luck to be there, but you had the ability to say yes to it. Yep. When Brandon first said, PJ, I think you should learn to code, I had a summer ahead of me of a pandemic where I was literally going to be sitting at home and doing nothing. Exactly. I used to work a second job as a teacher, and I was like, well, I don't have that, so I guess I'll learn to code. So I had an opportunity to say yes because my circumstances allowed me to. So it's all about, like, yes, taking advantage of the opportunity, but you're someone with a PhD, Brandon's someone with a CS degree, I'm someone with a degree in reading poetry. Like, we have different opportunities, but we're finding that our different paths that led us there are giving us the next set of opportunities that we're going to be able to take. So don't ever discount, like, your people in the audience. Don't discount your past. Your past is what's led you to exactly where you are right now. And you can always do new things next, you know?
Yeah. I've had to remind myself too, and I remind my friends who want to do shifts in their career, that your resume, you can never just, like, erase something off your resume, you know? And I don't mean resume in, like, the formal sense, but more the way you were just describing, PJ. Like, if you've done something, you've done that, and your experiences are only additive, right? And I really want to highlight you just said, PJ, about having opportunity. Like, I was lucky enough that my mom spoke fluent English when I was born, and I went to a school where I learned Spanish. I actually was taught math and history and science, everything in Spanish from kindergarten grade, but at home we spoke English, and that was a huge opportunity. When I know accessibility is often talked about in terms of, you know, able bodies or things like that, but I my line has been, if you put an English dictionary, a purely English dictionary, in home of Spanish speakers, that is not accessible to them. You know, it's just a book with words.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that in everything I do. I can't be perfect at it, but I really do strive for that, because watching my mom start community college when I was two and attending classes classes with her, taking exams with her. I got to take her Spanish final exam with her once. And having her see what I do and having her realize, had she had that opportunity when she was, you know, my age, she probably would have been a developer, you know, because she was interested in that. She was doing some of that work in these side jobs, but then she had me and she's, you know, chose to have me and she's grateful to have had me. But it meant changing her career. And, you know, it was the same with my daughter. Like I had my mom not been in a position to be able to retire and had I not been in a position to have her be able to move up with us, I don't know that I'd be able to continue working right now because who's going to watch my 3-year-old during a pandemic if both of her parents are working, you know, it's just so very much circumstantial and taking the opportunities that you have. But I think you touched on something, PJ, which is, you know, if you feel like you're missing on one because you need to or have chosen to do something else, try to look towards all of the paths that are opening up, because especially in today's world, we can create new roles and we can create new careers on TikTok, like with NFTs, whatever your path is, there's a way that you can create that. And I say that in coming from a very privileged position now, but you know, like it wasn't 30 years ago when we were living in our car and hoping that we could share this McDonald's meal together, right? And so, and that wasn't just hard work, but it was making choices that made the most sense for that moment in time.
Yeah, and it's interesting how your life experiences will dovetail. Things don't think have anything to do with each other. Like for me, I actually satellite networks my first job, and eventually made my way to Microsoft and C#, and figured fine. But then, what, couple Azure announced that they're doing this whole terrestrial ground station, like what they call it, like I don't know, we'll say Azure, stuff like that. I'm like, oh, I actually know all about that, and it just so happens to be I'm the only person on my knows that stuff. And like we interviewed a couple people, like I was able to put out some videos, tutorials on that stuff. Something that I never come in handy.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like your past that you're like, oh, well, I guess that wasn't as useful. And then suddenly it pops up and you're like, oh, actually, I can help with this. I actually just gave
it's basically been like a. It's like a moon.
The lag.
Speak face. Basically, like it just kind of turned into like fun telling you about how satellites worked, or like I could point to a satellite on the side of the house and tell you what it's for, or like point to a tower and tell you what all those antennas do. But yeah, we're coming from the circle.
Now it's useful. Now it's actually useful.
Yeah, I love that.
So Dr. G, you've got this background, and like you said, you've got these 3 degrees, and you're still a person who says like, you don't need a degree to work in computer science. And you mentioned this this Twitter kerfuffle, as it were, the other day. And what I saw in that kerfuffle, what made me really excited to be a part of the tech community that I chose on Twitter, the people that I follow, was how everyone was like, this isn't true. And the aim of what they were doing was telling people outside, hey, if you're seeing this, it's wrong. Like, you don't have to have a degree to do this. This person's lying to you. If you want more information, here's where you can go. And that's what I've noticed in the tech community. Like I said, I chose to follow these tech people. It is diverse. We've got drag queens. We've got Latino and Latinas. And we've got non-binary Latinx people, too. We have Black people. We have, like, tons, tons of people from a variety of backgrounds.
Young people, all over the world.
Everybody. So, like, that diversity in tech is my experience with tech right now. Working remotely, my tech community is Twitter. Is tech always been like this? Is it changing? Is it something that's been there and has been hidden? What, when we talk about diversity in tech, what are we talking about?
Yeah, no, that's a really good topic, because it definitely hasn't always been there. I mean, I remember listening to a talk by this woman who when she first started at this tech company, they did not have women's restrooms.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. So, you know, nowadays we'll have your neutral restrooms. I mean, when I started at GitHub, all of the restrooms, well, not all of them, but they had a gender neutral restroom, which just had doors where the toilet was, because, like, why not? That just, I don't, whatever. Anyways. And then they also had private restrooms where you could just be in one room by yourself, you know, like, it just more inclusive. They had, you know, rooms where parents could go and, you know, pump or breastfeeding, for example. And, you know, all of that type of inclusive, I think, is important. Where I used a lot of my energy, I was one of three women in my first of computer science. And this was, you know, not that long ago, but relatively. And so it was, and I was one of two Latinx folks. It was not another woman. So, you know, it was not super like diverse at the time. But that's why I focused on, like, I was a part of the team, one of the first AP computer science principles courses. And for those of you who don't know what that is, AP is advanced placement here in the United States. And what that is basically the set of courses that are nationally recognized. And there's a certain type of curriculum as well as exam you can take. And then that exam, if you get a certain score, will qualify you for college credit. And so it's essentially a college level course that you can take in high school. And the computer science principles was a course that we were saying was the computer science that every single graduating high school student should take prior to graduating high school. And so it wasn't, we want to be a computer scientist. It was, we want everyone to understand. We actually wrote a paper called "The Computing as the Fourth R." You should have a basic understanding of reading, writing, arithmetic, and computing, right? Just a basic understanding so that you can participate in the society. And I focused a lot of my energy on that next generation, because the more we can introduce a diverse set of younger people to the industry, the more likely it is that we will have a diverse industry. And then, of course, it's not a pipeline problem. It is not just that. It is also supporting institutions or programs that allow students to have the ability to focus on that. You can't really do a computer science course when your students don't have internet or a computer at home to do homework, for example. So we built a course that didn't have homework. You did everything during class, because we had to make sure that they had access. And then, you know, similarly, a lot of the schools only had access to Chromebooks, not to any, like, you know, operating system where you can install things.
Right.
And so it had to work all in the browser. You know, we went through all of these iterations. We localized the content, you know, and we worked with folks on that. And then it's the inclusive nature of the industry. Again, one of my first full-time positions in industry was that GitHub engineering manager position. When I left, I had a team of 10 people where literally I had more women of color than men on my team, which blew my mind. And it was because, you know, GitHub was and is not perfect, but it was because, in particular, Phil was an advocate for hiring the right people for the jobs. So, and he made it a point to have a community of people, his community of people, be diverse. And so when he was looking for the right person for the job, he could look through a diverse set of candidates. And then that would yield the right person. And it just so happened that that team then looked diverse, because it's not like diversity is not a metric. It's not something to check off. It is, it will happen if your community is diverse, right? If you're looking through a diverse lens. And so it's a lot of pieces. But no, it wasn't always diverse. And that's why I try to focus on that. I got an opportunity to partner with Warner Brothers on their Space Jam and making content around that. And I advocated for that out because, you know, in my mind, folks who really care about basketball might not realize how much data science and machine learning goes into the sport, how much that goes into choosing players for a team, choosing whether to bench someone on a game or have them play, choosing whether, you know, what, like, there's so much data that goes into it. And if you're interested in basketball and you're also looking into what careers you might want to go into, that might be an interest for you. And we don't have a lot of examples like that. All of our examples are like, oh, how can you make more money with this sharing app? And it's like, cool, but like, can we have some other types of examples? So I try to advocate for that type of storytelling along with the technical pieces.
I love it. Sarah, I have a question for you about how you could redo the education system. But first, let's get a word from our sponsors.
Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ. And we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So, if you're an avid listener of the show, or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that your product, is right for you.
I gotta be honest, I can't wait to replace that with a real ad that you can send in.
I feel like I might need to talk to Chloe about putting an ad for our podcast in there or something.
We accept money for that. Yes, absolutely. Actually, that'd be fun. That'd be fun to have you guys do that.
Yeah, and do want to talk about it real quick. You mentioned kind of the small tweaks you were able to make learning more inclusive. But I'm curious, if you could just blow up the entire system, let's just start. How would you design, say, a K through 12 education that matters?
You know, I don't think it can be a magic wand. Let's redo it. And I would say the big thing is incorporating it into all of the subjects. So, for example, and PJ, you can correct me, but what I've noticed about, like, the other three R's, the reading, arithmetic, is what seems to be effective for a lot of students is showing how the three parts of the things that we say are important for learning, math, reading, and writing, can come together. And so, you know, one of my favorite types of assignments that I would do as a child would be when we would read a story, we would write an alternate ending, and then maybe there would be like some fun graphical, you know, representation using the formulas of geometry to like plot something out on a graph chart or something. Mm-hmm. Those were math words. But I think that's part of it. So for example, maybe you have an assignment and Minecraft Education Edition, by the way, which recently has opened up to not just formal education institutions, but also after school programs or things like that. Minecraft Education Edition has curriculum like this, where you could have like this heavy module where maybe learning about ancient Egypt, and then maybe there's a story that goes along with it, and then maybe you write your own. You know, I remember this from like third something where we would write as if we were one of the pharaohs or something.
Right.
Write a letter, and then you go in Minecraft and you create a scene that might have happened in that time, and you use the coding to make it interactive or something, right? Mm-hmm. So the point of introducing computing or computer science, especially to young students, is helping them understand how it can apply to any aspect. And in fact, I taught a course to high schoolers who were in foster care. And so these foster children came and they got opportunity to come to UCSD, which was my school in San Diego, and take a free computer science course. And some of them were, yes, I got this, we're going to do this. I was using the App Inventor, MIT App Inventor, which allows you to build a functional Google app that you could actually either put on the App Store or install on your phone. This was many years ago, so I'm not positive what it is now. But I had this one girl, and she could not care less. She did not care about this. She, you know, and understandably, like, I don't know what her life was like, but she had to. She was just like, I do not care. Mm-hmm. And rather than, well, you have to, you know, whatever, I said, no problem. Tell me what you're interested in. And she was like, I want to be a preschool teacher. So apps don't matter to me. Like, I don't care. And I said, okay. And I said, what if, you know, you want to be a preschool teacher? And what if, you know, in preschool, you're teaching kids about letters and maybe short sight words. I said, and what if you have a group of, you know, five kids, but one of your kids is struggling with some sight letters or words? What if you could that night build a very simple app to just help them with sight words? And all the app would do is show them the sight word, and then they could say it, and then they could click it, and it would record them saying it, and then they could click the word, and it would say you saying the word, right? Mm-hmm. So if the word was two, then they could click it, it would say two, and then they could record themselves. And then while you're doing other activities with the other, you know, eight kids that you have, that kid could be on, you know, simple tablet practicing those. Because you can't split yourself in two, but then you can help that student. And immediately she lit up and she was like, now I see how me knowing a little bit of coding could help me achieve what I want to achieve, which is to help young children. And that's where I think the priority of integrating computer science education into all walks of life is the strongest. It's when you can help people see that tool can help them achieve what they want to achieve and not just be a developer for us.
Yeah. And that's so many people think of tech, they just think of it as, well, like, so you have to go and make an app or you have to go and do this, but they don't see the value of simply understanding how things work. And to use kind of a metaphor, kind of an analogy, when I used to finish with my seniors, there was always like 2 weeks at the end of the year for seniors where like, there's nothing for them to do. We've finished the curriculum. They've got graduation in 2 weeks and like, there's no time to do something new. So I would always have like a little film unit in my pocket where I was like, hey, we're going to talk about the language of film and how to analyze film. Yeah. And most of the time, most of the kids are checked out. It's senior year, yada, yada, yada. And I remember like several kids every year would be like, I can't watch films regularly anymore because I'm thinking about the choices made. And I'm like,
yeah,
good. Because now you're not passively just taking stuff in. You're actively involved in something now. And I think the same is true of technology. You shouldn't just think, oh, well, this is how it works. Like, you should know at least a little about it. Dr. G, we got to talk about like these amazing things you're doing. First off, there's that podcast you were talking about earlier. And you tell us about that podcast, and I'm going to drop your link tree in the chat. But yeah, tell us about this podcast you're on.
Completely unrelated to tech, but a good friend of your your show, Chloe Condon.
A creator of the show.
creator of the show. She and I found a mutual love for 90s movies and TV shows. And in particular, just the fact that a lot of the themes from those shows played out into who we are today. So we just have a podcast where we go over 90s TV shows and movies. In fact, our most recent episode at the time of this show is featuring PJ, where we went over our first Disney original film, which was Johnny Tsunami. Lots of fun. Brandon has also been in. Yes, Brandon has also recorded an episode with us, but that'll be coming in the future. I like to just kind of branch out. In fact, real quick, Johnny Tsunami actually has a whole storyline about tech, which I had forgotten about, which is fun.
Yep.
but yeah, I mean, in general, I've written a few books on tech. My most recent one was actually a few years ago now, but GitHub Freeze, that one was fun. I will make YouTube videos. In particular, I want to start making more videos in Spanish. So feel free to head over to my YouTube channel or any of my social medias and let me know if you have interests in topics, especially if you want me to do them in Spanish. TikToks every once in a while. I usually do like 50 of them and then disappear for a week because ADHD. I go on like random little, like, you know, not aggressive, but rants about parenting, and my three almost 4 year old daughter is just amazing and it's fun. So I'll talk about things that I do with her. I'm just on the social media. I'm basically at Dr. Guthels on everything, including Space Hit, which is like that new MySpace thing. I haven't gotten into it yet, but I'm excited about it.
I thought I was on the edge with Polywork. I haven't even heard of Space Hit.
It's literally like a MySpace recreation. I'm so excited about it. But yeah, Salute Your Sports is the podcast. You should listen to it. It's on pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Just connect me and let me know technically that you're interested in learning about, and I'll probably want to talk about it.
That's right. Brandon. Oh, I was trying to time it to see if I could get the lag correct there.
I just feel like I'm on the moon. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I apologize. My setup hasn't been better. It's just so fascinating listening to your stories, listening to your advice, work hard, but look out for those opportunities, that luck when it comes your way. Keep open for all the other new opportunities that appear as you go. You never lose those old opportunities. It's been such a blessing to have. Everybody, do go follow Dr. G Linktree that we have in the comments. By the what else? What did I miss, BJ? Did I get all of it?
Follow her on TikTok. Like, she's been talking about Are You Afraid of the Dark lately on TikTok, going episode by episode. And it's been fascinating to see these old episodes that I remember terrified me as a child and now are like, oh, that's actually still a little scary.
Yeah.
You think you're fine. And that's actually also an episode of the podcast. Also an episode of the podcast. Salute Your Scorch. They did that with Joe Carlson. Shout out Joe. But yes, I want to reiterate everything Brandon said and to tell all of our viewers and listeners, go look up what Dr. Guthels is doing. There's never been as prolific a person and as amazing a person that I've interacted with. Like, Brandon, you were really cool, but the fact that I got to meet Sarah Guthels and that I can call her someone that I'm collaborating with, and I know that you're into horror, so more on our horror project that we're going to make later. But any final words, final advice, any last thing that you feel like you have to say to everyone, Dr. G?
First of all, thank you both for having me on the show. It was an absolute pleasure. I'm so grateful to know both of you as well. And to anyone listening, I want to say, to me, you belong if you're interested in tech. I'm one person, so I can't, be available to everyone, but please feel free to reach out. And if I have the bandwidth, I'm always happy to respond. And I think, you know, stay true to the things you believe in, stay true to the things that you're excited about, and let's make space for those things to impact others, because it's likely that you are not the only one who believes in those things or excited about those things. So let's do it together.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you for that message. Thank you, Dr. Kelpo. Thank you, Brandon, for coming in all the way from Prague / like the other side of Venus. I know it's rough over there, but thank you all so much for listening. And we will catch you all next week on 8-Bits.